One of the reasons, as you know, is that binary neutron stars are thought to be very good candidates for detection of gravitational waves from detectors such as, for example, Advanced Virgo in Italy. But there is also another reason for which we are so interested in them, and is this because binary neutron stars are thought to be good candidates for the engine of short gamma ray bursts. People think that at the end of the merger of binary neutron stars, there is the possibility to form massive tori that surround rotating Kerr black hole, and this can provide sufficient energy to power the jets that are behind gamma ray bursts. So in my talk, I will touch both the topics. So I have a first part in which I will mainly concentrate on the possibility of forming massive tori at the end of the merger and about the properties of this tori. And in the second part, instead, I will concentrate more on a recent work we have done in order to extend the EOB approach to generate gravitational waves, waveforms for binary neutron stars. So in both cases, we numerically simulated these sources using our fully general relativistic magneto-hydrodynamical code WISCI. In all the simulation that I will show, actually we didn't use magnetic field, so it's pure hydro, but we are also simulation with magnetic field. So this is a work that I've done in collaboration with Luciano Rizzolo at AI, Luca Baiotti at University of Osaka, Devin Link at the Humboldt University, and Jose Font at the University of Valencia in Spain, and it's been recently published. So what we have done was to consider six different an equal mass binary neutron star system with the total masses that you can find in the second column. So this total mass of the system is pretty high, but we decide to use this very high massive neutron star in order to have a prompt collapse to black hole and see immediate deformation of a black hole and a torus. The mass ratio goes from a mass ratio equal to 1 up to 0.7. So people think that most of the neutron stars will have mass ratio around 1, 0.9, 0.8, but you can also expect to have a neutron star up to 0.7. So this is the movie that Jocelyn didn't have time to show. So it's a movie that gives you an example of the evolution of an equal mass binary neutron star system. So it refers to the binary with a mass ratio of 0.8. So what you see here is a volume rendering of the rest mass density. The units are here and are in gram per cubic centimeter. And this is the most massive star. And on top you have the time of both, I think, in M and in milliseconds. So the two neutron star orbits for around three orbits. And at a certain point, the less massive stars start to be tidally disrupted by the more compact neutron stars and develop a huge tail, and at the end, as I said, you have an immediate collapse to a black hole surrounded by a very standard and hot torus. So now the simulation is simply stopped. The camera turned around in order that you can see better the size of this torus, which is pretty big. Then we just cut it in order to have a look at these details. So if you compare with the equal mass case, so there are very big differences in the details of this tori. So on the left, there is the rest mass density on the equatorial plane for a binary neutron star system with a mass ratio equal 1, so an equal mass binary. And as you see, the torus has a radius of around 20 kilometers, while in the case of the most extreme mass ratio, so 0.7, you form a torus that is much more extended and also with higher densities. So the radius of the torus is almost of 100 kilometers. And also if you look over a slice on the XZ plane, you see that in the equal mass case, the torus is very thin, so it has a height of around a bit less than 10 kilometers, while in the case of the unequal mass binary neutron star system is much thicker, of the order of 40 kilometers. We also had a look at the details of the dynamics of the mass after the torus is formed. So what you have here are space-time diagram of the evolution of the rest mass density. So on the horizontal axis, you have the x-axis in kilometers. X equals 0 corresponds to the position of the apparent horizon, and the vertical axis you have the time in milliseconds. So, first of all, note the different length scales. So this extends up to 60 kilometers, this one up to 100 kilometers. And as you can see, in the case of equal mass binaries, the torus show a periodic accretion onto the Bekoid. So you have this periodic oscillation, and the density is of the order of 10 to the 11 grams per cubic centimeter. If you instead consider the unequal mass binaries, the one with a ratio of 0.7, first of all, you see that some matter is ejected outside. This is the tail that you were seeing in the movie, and it is very important because this matter can actually fall back on the disk at a later time, and this could be, in principle, connected with the late-time activity that is observed in short gamma ray bursts. And if you look at the dynamics of the matter, you don't have this quasi-periodic oscillation, but you have a continuous accretion, essentially, on the black holes, and the density is much higher. We also had a look at different at other properties of Torai. One that is very interesting, especially for me, is the evolution of the structure of the angular velocity. So again, you have similar plots as before. So there's a space-time diagram from the angular velocity. So again, you have on the x-axis the distance from the apparent horizon of the black hole, on the vertical axis the time in milliseconds. And what can be seen is that in both cases, the angular velocity decreases going outwards. This is very important because if you add the magnetic field on top of the disk, then you may expect this disk to be unstable to the magnetorotational instability, which means that even when starting with the low magnetic field, you can amplify the magnetic field, and this can provide a mechanism to extract energy from the system and then launch a jet. And it is something that we are currently investigating. We also had a look, of course, at what is the mass of this toroid that are formed. So on the right, you have a table with all the six models that we are considering, the total mass and the mass ratio going from 1 to 0.7. So in the case of equal mass, the mass is pretty low, or the order 10 to the minus 3, so it will probably not be sufficient to power a gamma ray burst. But when you go to mass ratio 0.8 or 0.7, you can obtain very massive torai with masses of the order 0.2 solar masses, so they have sufficient energy to be able to power a short GRB. We also try to fit the data that we have from for our torai. So the red crosses represent the masses of the torai that were obtained in this case, while the green squares are torai that were obtained from previous simulation for equal mass binary neutron stars. So here on this axis you have the mass ratio going from 1 on the left to 0.7, 0.6 on the right, while here you have the total mass of the system, and the z-axis is the mass of the torai. And what you can see from this plot that essentially the torus mass decreases both with the mass ratio and with the total mass. So if you want to create a very big torai, you need a system that are not too massive, and you also need the mass ratio that are different from 1. And as you can see from this fit, if you can even generate much larger torai, for example, the order 0.3 solar masses. We also had a look, of course, at the gravitational wave signal. So these are the gravitational wave amplitude for three cases. This one is an equal mass, is an equal mass case, so mass ratio equal 1. This is an intermediate case, mass ratio 0.94, and this is the most extreme case that we consider, mass ratio 0.7. And what is really interesting is the gravitational wave signal, that in both cases, of course, you have the signal coming from the spiral, then you have the merger. But after the merger, since, as I said, this system are very massive and form immediately a black hole, in the equal mass ratio, you have the usual ring down of the black hole. When you go to lower mass ratio, which means that you start to have larger torai, you tend to suppress the ring down of the black hole. So in the case of 0.94, it's not evident as in the case of mass ratio equal 1, and if you go to 0.7, you don't have any ring down at all. So the presence of a massive torus at the end of the merger of binary neutron star can be associated in the case of gravitational waves with the absence of the ring down in the gravitational signal. Unfortunately, the ring down happens in this case at very high frequencies, so the order of 6-7 kilohertz, so it's completely invisible to the gravitational detectors like Advanced LIGO and probably also for the Einstein telescope. So another work that we're doing more recently instead is more focusing on the idea of producing templates of gravitational waves from binary neutron star. So we're trying to extend the effective one-body formalism to binary neutron star case, and this is a work that is currently in preparation. We hope to submit the paper very soon, and it's done in collaboration with Luca Baiotti, University of Osaka, Thibault Namur, Alessandro Nagar in Paris, and Luciano Rezzolla and the AI. So there were some talks about EOB yesterday, and as many of you know, the EOB approach works very well for binary black holes, both for equal mass and unequal mass cases. And yesterday was also a talk by Enrico Baruste showing the application of EOB to spinning binary black holes. In many cases, one can use the EOB approach essentially to compute the complete gravitational wave signal from a binary black hole system by matching the spiral part with the ring down of the black holes. And this, of course, is very useful because it increases our capabilities to build templates that you can use for the detector. So one of the questions is, can you do the same for binary neutron stars? So in principle, can you do the same for the spiral part of binary neutron star? It's very difficult to think that you can use it also to simulate what happens after, but at least one can hope to be able to compute with EOB the most important part of the signal that can be detected by the detectors. So there were some talks yesterday about the EOB, so I will not give too much details, but essentially the EOB approach consists in reducing this two-body problem in a perturbation of a sparse black hole given by this Hamiltonian, which can be written in this term, and essentially you hide all the post-Newtonian correction inside this function of A, which a third post-Newtonian order can be written in this way. In the case of binary black holes, an expression that works very well is this extended one in which you have two more coefficients, A5 and A6, and this one were computed by comparing with numerical relativity simulation. And so we are using for these two coefficients, the second feature that were computed for the binary black hole case. Now, neutron stars are not black holes, so they cannot be treated as point particles, but they have a tidal deformation, which are very, very important in order to compute the signal. If you don't consider the effect of tidal deformation on the surface of neutron star, you get completely wrong wavefront from the AOB approach. So you can introduce tidal deformation in the AOB, modifying the function A of R that was inside the Hamiltonian by adding the tidal correction. And these are done by introducing what are called the Lorentz numbers. So yesterday, Jocelyn mentioned what they are. Essentially, they measure the deformability of a neutron star. In the case of a black hole, the Lorentz number will be zero, but it's higher in the case of a neutron star, and it's different for different equation of state. More recently, Damur and Nagar were also introduce higher correction next to leading order post-Newtonian correction to this term, and they can express in this way, where this new coefficient, alpha 1 and alpha 2, could be in principle computed analytically, but this is very difficult. And what we did was actually to get them from numerical simulations. So in order to match with the AOB, we had to run a very, very long simulation of binary neutron stars. I think these are the longest binary neutron stars simulation done up to now, if you consider the spiral part. We did something like 10 and 11 orbits, so we considered so up to 22 cycles in the spiral part. We considered two equal mass cases with the masses 1.36 and 1.51, and this is the compactness in the two cases, 0.12 and 0.14. And we checked the numerical accuracy of our waveform using a different resolution, changing the equation of state, for example, running with a polytropic or with an air fluid, and consider also different extraction radii. And we get that the numerical accuracy of our waveform is very, very good, and essentially the error in the phase is the order of 0.2 radians. So what we did was to compute the gravitational wave signal using the EOB approach with next to leading order tidal correction. And what you have here are the gravitational wave signal for the two masses that we have considered. And in red, you have the gravitational wave signal computed by the EOB approach. And in black, you have instead the numerical relativity data. And as you see, the overlap is very, very good, and with an error which is older 0.2 radians, so it's inside error bar of our numerical relativity waveform. And what is very, very interesting is that in both the cases we use the same values for the coefficient alpha 1 and alpha 2. So alpha 1 equals 7, alpha 2 equals 70, and they were working perfect in both cases. So in principle, as I was saying yesterday, you can do the same also with a standard Taylor T4 post-Newtonian expansion if you have this tidal correction, but we were not able to have this good overlap by using, for example, the same coefficient for the two different neutral stars. And another important point is that the next two leading order correction to the tidal effects are very, very important. If you look essentially the effective log number, this is 2.5 times higher than the one that comes from leading order. So including this higher order correction that we're describing in Damur and Nagar 2009, it's really, really important in order to obtain very good waveforms. So this looks really, really promising. Of course, there are just two cases. These are equal mass, but the EOB approach seems to be really robust also in order to describe binary neutron stars waveforms. So to conclude, with the WISCI code, we are able to run a very long and stable simulation of binary neutron star merger during all the phases of an ESPARA merger and ring down to black hole plus a torus. In the case of an equal mass binary neutron star, we are able to form a very massive toroid that in principle can power short gamma ray burst. We're studying in details the properties of this toroid. I think we were the first to do this in full GR to have really a look at all the properties of this toroid, like angular momentum, angular velocity, and so on, accretion rates. And at the moment, we are currently investigating this system with the more realistic equation of state and magnetic field, because we are really interested to see if it's possible, for example, to power jets from this system. And as I told in the second part of the talk, we also did some very long numerical simulation. I think these are the longest up to now, in order to be able to see if we can apply the EOB formalis to compute the gravitational wave signal from binary neutron stars. We have seen that there is the need to use next to leading order tidal correction in order to match with the numerical waveform, and the match is very, very good, with a very good agreement over more than 20 cycles in the waveforms and with an error of a bit less than 0.2 radians. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone up there?
Yes. Yes, is it similar then to the work that, because also, for example, Alessandro Nagel, Thibault Damour did a work in which they were comparing with initial data computed by Koji Yuryu. So the first, I mean, when they started to have a look at this next two leading order, instead of looking to simulation, they were using this sort of initial data, so quasi-equilibrium configuration. So maybe it's something similar, or? Okay.
Ian?
Is there a simple explanation for why the accretion damps the ring down signal?
Well, I mean, the mass of the black hole is order of, for example, two solar masses, and you have a disk that is order of 10% or larger than the mass of the black hole, and you have this continuous accretion onto the black hole. So essentially, the black hole is not able to ring down because there is a lot of matter falling of it. In the case of equal mass, instead of the mass of the black hole, or the mass of the torus is essentially negligible, so the black hole doesn't even feel it.
So it's not so much that it's damped, but it's disrupted.
Sorry?
It's not so much damped as disrupted.
So yes, I mean, it's, yeah. In the very extreme case in which you have a mass ratio of 0.7, because in that case, really, you have a continuous flux of matter onto the black hole, so the black hole is essentially prevented from ringing down.
My other question is about the error estimate. So I'm trying to compare that with our binary black hole simulations. Mm-hmm. So where is this measured? Is this is presumably before the merger, because
this is where
you stop doing EOB. So is this...
it's up to the merger, let's say.
Okay, so do you know the frequency or the time for merger?
So I don't remember the exact number of the frequency at the merger, but I think it was something like 1.7 kHz. I should check the exact number, but I think it was...
Okay, we can talk about it later.
So you've said that, you know, you've verified the need for these next to leading order tidal corrections.
Uh-huh.
If I understood correctly, then these are going to depend upon the equation of state of the neutron star, right?
Yes.
So if I'm looking at this as I'm searching for these signals, you're telling me I need these corrections, but they're going to depend upon the equation of state of the neutron star, which is not known. So uh-huh. Is there something you would tell me to do, something I should use in my template waveforms?
Well, what we expect that you will have, I mean, different gravitational wave signals associated with different equation of states. So in principle, you should match the gravitational wave signal that you will detect with these templates in order to understand what is the equation of states. I mean, this is essentially the work that was done by Jocelyn Reed, in which she was studying the dependence of the log number with respect to the equation of state.
Are there other questions?
Remembering a simulation, but so you have this result that the size of the torus increases as the mass ratio decreases.
Yes.
But eventually you're going to sort of transition from this prompt collapse to the hypermassive remnant. And in that case, would you get any torus at all afterwards? Or how big is that? Has there been an exploration of that parameter space?
So I don't know if I understood the question. I mean, the problem that if you want to study, for example, even with a simple ideal fluid, the evolution of hypermassive neutron star, this takes a long time. I mean, the neutron star takes very long before collapsing. So in our case, we concentrated with very high masses because we wanted to have the torus immediately. We didn't want to run for months. In the case in which you have an hypermassive neutron star, you can have the formation also of a massive torus. There was a simulation we did. It's actually the waveform that you shown in your talk. In that case, a low mass was a... I don't remember the mass of the system, but anyway, the mass was lower. That in that case, it was an equal mass binary. It was forming this hypermassive neutron star that was evolving, was rotating for the order of 140 milliseconds before collapsing to the black hole. And in that case, if I remember correctly, the mass of the torus was something like 0.1 solar masses, so it was very, very massive. And it is something that...
So that's in line with your fitting formula there?
Sorry?
Is that in line with your sort of fitting...
This square here, 0.1 solar masses. This is essentially the mass of the torus that is formed at the end of this very long simulation, which you have the hypermassive neutron star evolving for 140 milliseconds, then it collapses to black hole, and
So you get the same general behavior even if you have the long delay in the actual collapse?
Even if you have, the equal mass case, but you reduce the total initial mass, then you increase the mass of the torus.
Thanks.
Oh, yeah, just regarding your EOB fits. So did you actually, what was the free parameter that you fit to? I sort of missed that. Was it the Love
number? There are two coefficients, which are these two.
These alphas.
Alpha 1 and alpha 2, yes. These are the two coefficients that you have to tune. This alpha 1 was estimated by Damur and Nagar in the previous paper in which they were considered this initial data by Koji Euro, so this quasi-stationary configuration, and they were getting a value around 7, and this is the same value that we used also to match with our simulation.
Okay.
While this one was really fitted with our numerical simulation.
So the Love numbers are calculated separately? These kappas are calculated?
Yes, exactly. These are Eiger correction to the...
So you compute the Love numbers from just whatever stellar model you have, and then you have some additional fits on top of those.
Okay. Thank you.
You said that you needed to, your effective Love number had to be, 2.5 times
the original estimated, which is a huge.
Yeah, this is the effect of the next leading order. Yeah.
Next leading order is 2.5 times.
Yes. I mean, if you don't include this next leading order correction, then you get an error in the phase, which is order of 2 radians instead of 0.2.
But is that error accumulating at an even rate throughout the merger?
Sorry?
Is that phase error accumulating evenly throughout the merger at all separations? I mean.
Yes.
I'm reluctant to continue this discussion. I want dinner at some lunch at some point.
We're about one talk late by now.
Well, I'm just wondering, this is a pretty substantial correction on the leading order Love number, and I'm wondering if you can try to compute these corrections by using isolated, fully relativistic stars and looking at the quadruple moments and the, you know, just using a relativistic definition, and if it agrees. We did something with Mr. Bulas when I was in Greece about this. Does it agree?
I'm sorry, please use a microphone, otherwise we can't hear.
So I think at UWM there's also some current work in progress using this deformation formalism to check with quasi-equilibrium data and measure this. And also there was the work that Alessandro did with Koji's quasi-equilibrium. So there is a parallel track looking at this to extend to intermediate frequencies. No, not an individual star with an extra. No.
Thank you. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.